Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I welcome you to Lunatic Mondays on CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. Tonight, we have a guest whom I adore, and we always play ping pong when we get together. You'll hear about this. Her name is Tudor Beth. She's from United Kingdom. She's the principal of the British College of Witchcraft and Wizardry and teaches courses on witchcraft. She's also the author of The Hedge Witch's Little Book of Spells, Charms, and Brews Collection, and a spell book for the seasons. Tudor Beth is a hereditary practitioner. Her great-grandmother is a well-known tea reader in Ireland, while her Welsh great-grandmother was a healer and a wise woman. And you are a healer and a wise woman of words. I love your books, and I love to have you on the show, even when we have to play ping pong. How are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm very well, thank you. Bit windswept, but I'm very well, thank you. It's lovely to see you again and speak to you again, Laura. I always like our confabs. It's really lovely.
Thank you. I love having you on the show. The last time you were here we were talking about kitchen witchery. It was about the book on, let me see.
Seasons. Yeah, yes. It was the seasonal hedge witchery. Yeah.
And it's been a while. You've done this beautiful collection for Llewellyn, and it's great to have somebody that has that wisdom firsthand, coming from family and being preserved and being kept and then shared with others. But before we get into the book, I want to share this little anecdote with the listeners, because they're not going to believe us. It's so funny. Of course, she's in the UK. I'm in Chicago. There is this 5-hour difference. But then when we actually set up for the interview, we're still on the Central Standard Time. Now in Chicago, we are on Central Daylight Time, which is ridiculous and I hate. And then we were going like 10 o'clock, no, 5 o'clock, no, 3 o'clock, no, 2 o'clock. And the point is that today we are pre-recording. Folks know that we pre-record this show now. And we had set up a time. And even when we set up a time, there was confusion. So would you tell the listeners what just happened in your end of the world?
Right. Okay. So I had it in my head that it was going to be 5 o'clock my time. So GMT, Greenwich Mean Time, it would be 5 o'clock here and it would be 10 o'clock for you, because this is 5 hours difference. And that's what I'd got in my head. So I was telling everybody, I'm talking to Laura again tonight, this evening at 5 o'clock. So I went for my usual walk, because hedge witches are gonna go outdoors. We just need to be outside. And we've had really strange weather as of late here in England. We've got a lot of wind, which is really ironic, because that's another connection. You're Chicago. Chicago is the windy city.
Yes.
And it's weird. Five is also the number of witchcraft. But hey ho. So there's so many connections between this. So I'm out there walking, getting blustered and what have you. We had a tornado in England a couple of days ago. So it's really still quite windy. And it's still, tornado in Newcastle. And it caused a lot of damage. apparently it's the jet stream up above us, but it could be global warming. I'm not saying anything. But so I was out being blistered around. It's gloriously sunny. So if I have a rosy glow, it's because it's absolutely beautiful. It's probably also wind burn as well, probably. And I'm taking pictures of the wild bluebells that are out. I'll probably put some on the pictures on my Instagram as well, actually, when I finish talking to you. And I suddenly thought, I'm talking. I've got to get back for Laura at 5 o'clock. I've got to talk to Laura at 5 o'clock. I've got to be back by then. I'll just check on my emails, and then lo and behold, you sent me an email to say, "Yeah, Sarah, it's 3 o'clock. We're meeting at 3." So it's so weird. So many connections.
And the weirdest part of it all is I happen to have woke up early.
Oh.
And so when I saw your email that you said 5 o'clock, I'm like, no, it's three. And because I'm ready and because I have something else going on later, which I'm not going to share. But the other thing, as we were chatting, right, the connection with the Windy City. Did you know why they call Chicago the Windy City?
No, I just know it from Calamity Jane, the song.
So the thing is, a lot of people be thinking, and rightfully so, that is because it's very windy in here, which it is. It's really windy. We are right near the lake, in the Great Lakes area of the United States, the Midwest. So we have this huge body of water, almost like a small ocean, right next door. I'm like a mile away from, which is like 1.5 kilometers. And it's windy because we get a lot of that lake wind. And then with all the skyscrapers in Chicago, which is the birthplace of the skyscraper, the wind gets a little choppy even when you're inland, right? But that is not what the Windy City comes from. The Windy City comes from this rivalry that Chicago and New York have had forever, because it's the first city and then the second city. And then some people say, well, yeah, the first city and then the great city. And then, haha, yeah, God always do the first thing as a try, and then they perfected on the second try. I mean, it has been forever. And a lot of people call Chicago the second city because historically it is the second city. However, the Windy City comes from a figure of speech, because Chicago politics and politicians that will promise a lot of things that never happened. And also this rivalry between New York and Chicago. So it was a New Yorker who said, oh, those Chicago people, they're so windy. And he meant it as they are always talking
So
crap.
like full of, yeah, like full of hot air. We would say full of hot air.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. So that's where it comes from. But it just so happened that the city is very, very windy. And so we have adopted it, and that's fine. But, and I learned that because when I came to Chicago, having here for 25 years, I swallow the history of Chicago. I wanted to learn about Chicago. So I learned about the Chicago Fire. I learned about the Chicago sports traditions, communities, etc. So I kind of know some facts about Chicago that even Chicagoans don't know. And they'd be like, how do you know that? I'm like, 'cause I read the books. I watch the documentary. And speaking about how cities are and are portrayed, you and I were just talking just now behind the scenes that the UK is not engulfed on a cloud of rain and mist 24/7, 365. Please demystify that stupidity that is portrayed on the movies here in the United States.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, isn't it? It's like I think a lot of it stems from Sherlock Holmes and this idea that London is always foggy and misty and it's always raining in England and we live in our raincoats and we have our wellies and our little hats and our umbrellas because we carry umbrellas around everywhere like Mary Poppins, but we don't, you know. And you couldn't really use it with it being so windy late because you would be flying away like Mary Poppins with an umbrella, but it's total myth because, like I say here, it's beautiful blue sunny skies, you know, and we have glorious. Sometimes we do have glorious summers, and we do follow like the weather n nature weather seasons, you know. So autumn it will be windy, it can be cloudy, and we can have the mists and the fog. Usually in the spring and the autumn, in the summer, we do have lovely, glorious summer days. In the winter, in the northern parts, it will snow. I'm right on the coast, so I very rarely get snow because of the salt in the air from the sea. But because I'm on the north side as well, the northeast side, I'm of England. My weather, when it comes straight down from the Arctic. So it's really, really cold. We've got a northeasterly blowing at the moment, actually. But yeah, so the weather changes, and with England as well, the weather can change so quickly. Like in the morning, it can be rainy, cloudy, horrible, and then all by the afternoon, it glorious sunshine, you know. And so yeah, we kind of do go out with like umbrellas and sunglasses because you just don't know what you're gonna need,
Yeah.
really.
And but it's how it's portrayed in the movies, and we go by that, right? Because in the movies that we see about Mexico, it's always this deserted sepia bandito environment with people walking around with their shoe with the horse spurs and their cowboy hat. And I'm like, no, we're nothing like that. We don't have that. I mean, there's a lot of country where people are working the land, and original cowboys are a Mexican culture thing. Then they came to the United States, and Southern United States people, mainly enslaved people, so black and brown people were the very first cowboys. And then white people, descendants from your homeland, learn how to work the land and all of that from the enslaved black people and the brown people that were coming, because there was no borders back in there, and people would just come back and forth. But we're talking so much about history. We need to talk about you, and thank you
It's
for
so
giving us
weird to.
this.
I was going to say, sorry, you're so weird talking about history because I am, I'm along with being a hedge witch and doing all my other bits and bobs, I'm actually doing a doctorate in medieval history. Yeah, I'm doing a PhD at the University of Lincoln. And yes, so, and I
That's
noticed
amazing.
you love history as well, and you were reading your book, your 16th century book. I think it was about the gods or something, and all the different practices. Yeah,
Yes.
very, very interesting. That was really good. I like that. I caught that show. Yeah, very nice.
And I'm basically a nerd, and I love learning about history. And I, more than anything, I love to know where things come from. Like when we call some, like when we call a city the Windy City, why is it called the Windy City? Like I always like have this tendency to want to research the origin of things, you know? Like, why do we say God bless you when somebody sneezes? Like, where'd that come from? You know, it's just I'm a nerd. But anyway,
There's nothing wrong with being a nerd, especially a history nerd. It's the best thing. You've got it. You've actually got, I think you've got, sorry, you've got a really good medieval conference coming up soon in Chicago. At the Kalamazoo, the University of Kalamazoo, or something. It's a big, big, massive international medieval conference. And one of my peers is going to be speaking there.
Oh,
I'm sure it's
wow.
in Chicago. Check it out where it is. The International Medieval Conference is at the beginning of May.
Huh. I have
So,
to look that up.
yeah.
I have to look that up. And one of the things that I was thinking about medieval times when you were talking about it is all this torture apparatus that existed for witches.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
doing air quotes, witches, because I'm convinced that those women back there, they were not witches. They were God-fearing Christians that they just rebelled against their husbands and the status quo. And then the church, mainly the Catholic Church, the Spanish Inquisitive Church, created all this perverted apparatus to torture women mostly. And it was when I went to an expo in Mexico, probably in the 90s. When I was still there, that I saw this apparatus and I had a visceral reaction.
Right.
I was dizzy. I felt the pain and the desperation. And I must have been 15, 16 years old. And that's when I knew myself that I had experienced this, that I have been a witch before.
Yeah.
Where in the planet, I do not know, but I know it, and I felt the pain of my sisters dying. And
Yeah.
it's just horrible that the things that humans do to humans, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's interesting that because one of the main sayings that we have is that once born a witch, always a witch. So that in your lifetimes, you'll always be coming back. It'll always find you. It'll find you in one way or another, whether it be crystals, whether it be tarot, whether you go all out in it and you live and you follow the rituals and you do the moon rituals and all of it and all the different forms of witchcraft. It will always find you in some form. It will drain, you once born a witch, always born a witch. And it's there, and it's really interesting you talk about the horrible punishments, because a lot of those kind of torture things that the hands up, the British were pretty good at creating and making. If you ever come to England and you go around the Tower of London, there's a whole the whole they're all there, and you can see all these terrible things. But it's really interesting. One of the main torture things that they did with witches over here to get an admission of I'm a witch, as if, like you say, they weren't. Absolutely not. I don't. Was to force feed a woman. They used to strap them in the chair and they used to force feed them. Now, that same kind of punishment and torture that they would use to extract an admission of I'm a witch, was used by the suffragettes, by those that tortured the suffragettes. It's a chair and they were force fed with food going with like a tube going down, and they used to just force feed. It was a form of torture because the suffragettes used to refuse food. It was the same principle that they used to do, and politically they also did that to the IRA prisoners just in the 1980s. They
Wow.
force fed them, put them in a chair exactly like the chair that they put the witches in, strapped them to the chair, and force fed them.
You
So
know.
these forms of torture follow through centuries.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah,
disgusting.
because if there's anything that we have perfected as humans is how to harm each other. And the thing is, I'm doing a series of classes on decolonizing the goddess. Every year I try to find a topic for the classes that I'm going to be teaching throughout the year. And this year I decided to do the decolonizing the goddess, and I'm doing all the Aztec goddess, which the correct name is Mesoamerican goddesses. And every other myth of every other goddess speaks about sacrifice. And people throughout the world, they think Aztecs and immediately like, oh yeah, they're gonna throw you down the pyramid and they're gonna cut your heart because that's what they did. And then they use horrible epithets about our people. And I every time I'm teaching one of those classes, I tell my apprentices, we talk about sacrifice in those years by those people who are our ancestors, and we raise an eyebrow or we tend to deny it, like no, or people didn't do it. We don't know for sure. We don't know for sure. We know our people spoke on symbolism and allegories, and that a heart didn't mean always to take somebody's heart out. It meant love and joy and, having a good time, actually. Joy, more than anything, the heart represented joy. And then I always go back to, okay, but if the sacrifices were real, that's how they did it then. We should know better. We're still sacrificing a whole kind of peoples in the world, right? If you are not wealthy, you'll be sacrificed. If you are a certain kind of color, you'll be sacrificed. If you are disenfranchised type of people, you are sacrificed. You are the working class. And, and that's why they cannot put us in the same room, because you and I can speak history for 5 hours in a row.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the greatest sacrifices, they sort of like just talking, there's like this negativity, oh, with your Aztecs, and oh, they sacrificed this. Well, hang on, wait a minute. One of the greatest sacrifices in the entire world that you've been sprouted for the past 2,000 years is that of Jesus Christ. You know what I mean? And his blood was spilled. He was tortured. If you did, he was tortured, Roman torture, the crown of thorns, the spear in the side,
Yeah.
crucified, sacrificed. So, there's sacrifice always with our culture. It's
Yeah.
horrible.
Yeah. It's
I
horrible.
blame the ancient Romans. Everything is the Romans' fault. Ancient Romans. It's always the Romans. Blame the Romans.
I always blame patriarchy and men. Men
Oh, yeah.
trying to be having power over nature, having power over women, having power over other countries, having power over people that look different than them. And even for those that look like them, if they are less privileged, is having power over them.
Yeah.
So, but let's talk about gentler things and a
Yes.
lot of power, a lot of power, but in this case, nature's power. The power that comes from our allies in nature. Now you've written this Llewellyn collection, the Head Witch's Little Books collection, right? One was in Bruce, one was about the seasons, and the other one was about lunar magic. And in this occasion, you're coming up with the Head Witch's Little Book of Crystal Spells. First of all, tell us about where the inspiration come to speak about crystals.
Well, family. Once again, crystals are just around my family and growing up all the time. When I was a little kid, and we'd go to, well, growing up, and we'd go to Ireland, on holiday and things to visit family and that. We used to go looking for quartz on the beaches, because round Ireland, Ireland is a volcanic country anyway. It was originally volcanic, but if you go around it, it's got so much energy, and it has a lot of crystals. So we'd go along the beach, and you'd pick up these little like pebbles, and they'd be white, and there'd be different colored veins in them, and so it could be like either brown or pink or all the different things. And if you broke it open, you would expose the rose quartz. There's a lot of rose quartz on the southwest coast of Ireland. Similar here in the northeast of England, there's a lot of smoky quartz. So if you go on the beaches, so my childhood was picking up the stones, learning about the stones. In Ireland as well, we also had Connemara marble, which was also something that was very resonated on a spiritual scale as well. And so it's very much earthy. So some marble, those kind of things are very earthy kind of crystals. Because in the book, I do separate them with elements, because not many books do. But I was always taught, and I'm always coming from correspondences, because nothing in this world, in this universe, is separate. Everything is connected. And if you pull on one little strand, like I always say that the universe and the correspondences are like a giant spider's web. So if you pull on one little silken strand here, it's going to vibrate on another one and another one and another one. You know, it's alerting the giant spider, but it's there. So everything is resonating, and crystals are not a standalone type of resource for us. They are connected to everything else, just as everything else is connected, and crystals have, and they have a power that is unique to them, but they're resonating once again, such as, for example, amber. Amber resonates on so many different levels, because amber has an embodiment of a living life force. It came from a tree originally. Amber is the tree resin that's, thousands of years old. So it has the energy of not only being a crystal in itself, but it has the energy of that tree. And lo and behold, if you get an insect in there as well, you've got the energy of that insect. So all crystals resonating on different levels that connect everything. And so when I used to go, so for example, like I said about the Connemara marble, that is of earth because it's coming from within the earth, but it's also got its own energies as well. It's like a greeny color. Ironically, it's from Ireland, but it's green. And so when you're picking up quartz from the beach, that's got the energy of the sea with it. It's been, God knows how long it's been in the sea, floating around and going in all the lovely shapes and things, but it's still got that energy of the sea there that you're picking it up from. So that's how I managed to put them into certain sections in the book. And I'm very like linear at certain times as well. I have to go, right, so that one's earth, that one's air, that one, and I do it that way.
Wow, I found that very intriguing. Another anecdote, and people are gonna laugh, is we don't have the book yet. We were both, so folks that follow this show, they know two things that I book with ridiculous advance, because you and I were talking about this interview probably on December, and here we are recording on April. And we are recording very, very close to the date in which you are listening to us, because we kept pushing it and pushing it, which has also led to the confusion we had earlier, because we changed the date for recording probably a couple of times, waiting for the book. Unfortunately, the book, I mean, by the time you listen to this, hopefully the book is available for you to buy, but we. Usually, the author gets an advanced copy, and people like myself who help promote these books, we usually get a courtesy copy from Llewellyn that is not for sale, and it's kind of like an advanced copy, and we don't have that. And so I just had the book, some impressions from the book, and the first thing that I went to see right away was the table of contents. And then I noticed that you had them separated for water crystals and crystals of fire, crystals of air, crystals of spirit. Never have I ever in my 50 years of existence have seen anybody separate them like that. You kind of tap into that a little bit, but can you give us like some examples, like what is the how do you differentiate them? How you separate.
It's generally what they're resonating with. For example, the crystals of spirit, they're really crystals that you would that you would use for spirit contact, or even I think I do have in this book alien contact, because we do have the crystals that used to be meteors. So you have Mulvadite, which was a meteor thousands of years ago that crashed into the river in Moldova, and that's what was made Mulvadite. Incidentally, Mulvadite is getting really sparse and really rare. So if you manage to get your hands on a piece of Mulvadite, keep it because it's very, very rare now. So and then, like I said, with the Connemara crystal, there's like Triagate. So Triagate, of course, its very name, that's an earth. It's an earthy type of crystal because of its name, and you would probably use it for all different things as well. I've got a spell in there about connection to tree powers because it's bringing it out and using it. A lovely one is a moss agate as well that you would use for earth kind of spells. So pop it in your watering can, put it in with the water, and then water your house plants or your plants or what have you with it as well, because you're drawing out those energies with the crystals. And then with like the fire, once again, it's like garnet. Garnet is a really powerful fire stone as well, and you can use that to connect with fire goddesses such as Brigid, the Irish goddess of Brigid. She's a fire goddess. And then of course water wands. So we have in England, well, in Scotland actually, we have the Scottish samphire that's found in the riverbeds and different things, and it's the little tiny bluish, darkish blue, almost an indigo blue stone, and we call it a Scottish sapphire. It used to be very prized by the ancient Romans. Once again, it's getting rarer, and so we can use that to enhance different visualization spells and different things. So it's the actual crystals and that what they resonate with and how you can use them as well, not only where you find them, but also their names as well that I distance them. And so sort of like the crystals of air, so they're usually yellow once again. So it's enhancing what all these different correspondences, like I said previously. So the air crystals are usually on the yellow spectrum. So you could have gold sheen obsidian. That's good for air sprites, power spell. And so this is it. They will resonate on a different level with the different colors. So water ones are usually the blues, the blue crystals. The fire crystals will usually be on the red spectrum as well. And the spirit crystals are usually white and see-through, with Mulvadite being the exception, and the other meteors as well being exceptions, things that come straight from like the deepest, darkest parts of space, which, oh, look at that, gorgeous. What's that? Is an obsidian?
I'm showing to Beth a gold sheen obsidian ring that I just
Ooh.
acquired, and you cannot see it. Of course, you're listening to us, so you cannot see it, but you cannot see the sheen because we are indoors. You can
Yeah.
kind of see it a
Hiding.
little bit right there,
Yeah.
and it's funny because to me, obsidian, of course, is a connection to our ancestry, right? In Mexico, it's extremely sacred and important. And I never would have related obsidian with air and the correspondences of
Really?
air. But
Yeah.
now that you're talking about that gold sheen that comes from within, and the obsidian teot energy, God, if you will, big air quotes, Tezcatlipoca, is about communication with our subconscious mind. So,
Wow.
but it's not called communication with the subconscious mind, you know. It's about the smoke in the mirror. So think about the white noise between your subconscious mind and your conscious mind.
Yeah.
And to have that be a correspondence of crystals for air, my mind just went, you know, because I'm like, yeah, I can see it. I can see how that
Yeah.
could be that correspondence. Though most people will think fire because it's a volcanic rock, right? But that is
No,
fascinating to learn some
yeah,
new.
it's air, it's communication. Yeah, which is also within the realms of the. I didn't know that about with the your gold sheen obsidian. I just when we use it, it's always been for communication and air and things. So that's so weird. See, a lot of this stuff, it all comes round. It all comes round. Yeah.
I always wonder, and that is where the mysteries of the divine come from, right? Whether you call
Yeah.
it God, goddess, nature, whatever, how someone on the other side of the planet sees or hears or interprets a natural phenomenon or a natural thing like a crystal in a way, and then you go around the other side of the planet. There was no communication
Yeah.
before the 1300s. They say Vikings have contact before the colonizers. I believe that, but there was not a whole lot of trade before that historically, right? And how we have so very similar cultures, right?
I know, right.
Like you were talking about Bridget earlier, and she's obviously goddess of water and fire. And I was just teaching recently about Xochitlíhuac, who's a goddess of water, but it's also very important to have her combined with fire because fire and water create atmosphere, and atmosphere creates life, right? So these concepts that we just call them something different, but they are all describing nature and us humans trying to understand nature. And then one day, I guess one of these humans of eras past decided to start collecting pretty little rocks and then learn the qualities. Do you know where this quality correspondences with crystals come from? Who started doing it or why?
Oh, I have no idea, but it's gone on for since the beginning of time. It's in every single culture. It's in ancient Egyptians. It's, that from them grinding up malachite and putting it on their eyes to protect them from the evil spirits. It's absolutely everywhere, in all cultures, and it's come down to us. And I think this is it, that we respond to what's in our environment here in England. We have, like I said, we did it. We do have amber. We used to have the tree resin amber and things like that. We also have fossils. Fossils is another part of crystal lore as well. And fossils are just absolutely embodiment of so many ancient energies anyway, from little animals and this, that, and the other. But we also have, like I said, the Scottish sapphires, and we would also have little pearls as well, the ancient pearls as well. But we also used to do petrified wood. We have a lot of places that do petrified wood, and we still have that. One of the it's like a touristy attraction now, but up in Yorkshire, they have something called Old Mother Shipton's Cave. Now, Old Mother Shipton was an elderly soothsayer, a magician, a witch of the old order, and she had these caves, and she would take things off people and put them in this particular place with all the water dripping down, and they'd become petrified, so it would be a part of the magical ritual. 1480, 40, I'm just reading it. In Yorkshire, in the UK, there was an incredibly famous, I call her a hedge witch, Mother Shipton. 1488 to 1561, she lived alone in the woods near a cave, which she is said to be born in, and it also petrifies people's belongings. They still do it. They still go there to take like a shoe or something to represent something, and they hang it up, and then it gets petrified over time. It still happens. We still do it. We still follow these things through here in England. She predicted the defeat of the Spanish Armada and things like that. So she was very highly thought of as well. But so yeah, we have and petrified wood, of course, is taking on energy itself. It's got extra energy from the waters, from the air that's drying it out, and everything, not only itself. So
It's
yeah.
fascinating. It's fascinating. And the thing with crystals, in my opinion, of course, I'm not an expert, but they're so loyal, so gentle, and so easy, super easy to work with. Because all you need from a crystal is to have it nearby, and then you can benefit from their energies. Do you also have ways to use them here on your book?
Yes, I do, and I have some different types of ways because a lot of people, I don't know if you have them in the States now or anything, but a lot of people have like the water, like you're drinking kind of things, and they have like a special little cubicle inside the actual water jug where you can put crystals in. So they've got these now, and they're using them in the gym. And as they're working out, they've got these crystal gym. Makes me
Bottles,
laugh.
yeah.
But yeah, you can put crystals in them. So, and that's something that's come from our kind of lifestyle that we've always put, amethyst in the water, and we've always drunk that. But now it's gone on a more commercial kind of side where they've gone and taken that idea from us, and they've gone and creating these bloody water jugs where they've got crystals in them and things. So yeah, and of course we know that as an elixir. That is a crystal elixir that they're drinking. That's what we would have called it. But we can use it in so many different ways. I mean, depending on the crystal itself, and I always say, be careful to check because some crystals are toxic. Some are metal based that we would call a crystal, but they're still metally based. Bismuth is one of them, and vandenalite is another that is toxic. So we would never use that within food or drink or anything. But you can use them. You can put them in sugar, such as amethyst sugar. So it's resonating with the sugar, and then when you bake with that sugar, it's got that energy in. So a nice cake. So it once again, it's the correspondences, it's connecting, it's pulling on that little silken strand of the giant spider and going, okay, I'm gonna use this one, I'm gonna use this. So you might use turquoise howlite for something. You might use it for, I've got a spell here for howlite pet wanderer spell. But you can put a little piece of, once again, in the water, and then take it out, of course, before you drink it, and put it in their water bowl as well, so that your dogs and cats are having crystal healing as well through elixir.
Wow.
You can use them for so many different things. I also talk about creating your own crystal oils, and it's not just essential oils, but it's also oils that you would cook with as well. So if you're going to put it in water, then pop it in your oil just for a couple of hours, take it out and make sure you label the oil and use it in your cooking as and when. So you're still getting that energy of that crystal for your specific, problem or what you want to use it for. It's not just used for spells, but it can be used for absolutely everything. And originally, a lot of crystals were used for healing. They were always used for healing. Ancient Egyptians, once again, they were very, very clued up on their crystals, and of course, amethyst was one of their great ones. I mean, you just look at the, well, also in India as well, the temples that were used and had many, many jewels and crystals and semi-precious jewels. Not now
Yeah.
are in the royal crown.
Yeah. And in our culture, jade and oh my God, I can't remember. Turquoise,
Yes.
jade,
Oh, yeah.
and obsidian. They used to have these masks of either jade or turquoise, and they were just a thing of beauty, and they will use them to represent specifically beauty. You
Yeah.
know, they were like the symbology of beauty and spiritual work, spiritual enhancement, spiritual, you know, because it's about what happens to the crystal over time by being eroded by water and or the elements. And so the jade and the turquoise are very prevalent on the Mesoamerican culture, and a lot of people don't know that. They think we're
Yeah.
just sacrificing people with obsidian stones. But
Oh,
anyway,
yeah, you also have the crystal skulls, don't you? I thought crystal skulls came from.
I think that is a very modern thing. I don't think it's really, and I don't know enough to actually give you an answer on that, but not in Mexico. In Mexico, we have stone skulls and
Yeah.
stone sculptures and a lot of skull sculptures everywhere because we
Yeah,
were
very
obsessed
nice.
with the skulls because skulls were the symbol for resting. So if you wanted to rest, if you wanted to introspect, if you wanted to meditate, if you wanted to pause from your day and having a moment of, for yourself, the skull will represent that. So we were our people, our ancient ancestors, I couldn't think of the word, we're big on that, having a lot of skulls. So the skulls will represent time for leisure, time for resting. And the snakes will represent vibration.
Right.
So, and then, like I was telling you earlier, hearts represent joy. And then the hands, just the hands, will represent your actions.
Right.
And so there's a lot of sculptures that will have hearts, flowers, skulls, snakes, and hearts and hands. And I will never justify colonization, but I often think about the humans that came from the old world and came to see these magnificent stone sculptures and the culture shock and the fear.
Yeah.
They must have felt so much fear because their culture was to fear the snakes and to fear death and the skulls. They just have had the Black Plague a couple of centuries before. And then they come to America, the continent. I will never call United States America. When I say America, I'm talking about a continent. So they come to the American continent and they see all that in the areas of Mexico, what is now Mexico. And of course, they're like, ah, devil worshipers, because they didn't understand the visual language that was shared there with all this pictography, all this imagery. And but then we have the greedy ones that they started seeing the jade and the
Yeah.
turquoise, and they're like, oh yeah, let me help myself a little bit. So a lot of these pieces were destroyed or stolen. But
Yeah.
we do have not only people that work immensely with plumage, with the feathers, but also the lapidary arts of stone masonry. That, of course, it was probably not called that. I don't know exactly how did they call it, but there was amazing pieces made of obsidian,
Yeah.
turquoise, and jade. And one of the most famous obsidians is the one that John Deere somehow got his hands on, which is the Tezcatlipoca mirror, which is the obsidian mirror for scrying,
Yeah, yes, yeah.
and made scrying so famous on these black mirrors. And then you have these black mirrors coming all over the place, and the mirror on the wall. And then you tell people, like, yeah, that originated in Mexico. And they're like, oh my God, you third world country. What do you know? Like, my history. And we
Yeah.
know that the most famous scryer on the English court, if I'm not mistaken, it was John Deere,
Yeah,
who
one
didn't do the
John Deere.
scrying. He had other people doing the scrying. He had the theory, but he had other people doing the practice. And it all started with the black obsidian mirrors that they borrow, colonizers took, stole from Mexico, now
Yeah.
modern day Mexico, and they took over there. So obsidian is very, very sacred.
Yeah, obsidian is, yeah, Definitely. And it's weird how they all, like, we talked a bit about the ancient trade routes, but how they all came around. Very similar when you're talking about snakes. I mean, of course, here in, well, in Ireland, they had the snakes and the very famous story that, St. Patrick rid the island of all the snakes. The snakes was worshipped once again by the Celts. It wasn't evil. There wasn't any evil in it. It's not about sin or evil or the Garden of Eden and the fall from grace and all the rest of it, because there was no Christianity with the snakes. This is pre-Christianity, and the snake represented protection. So, it was a form of protection that you would see when you had the snakes, and a lot of Celtic, ancient Celtic jewelry and things has snakes. That look like dragons and these kind of things, because it's for protection and it's to ward off evil. And it didn't ward off Christianity, but it was to ward off evil, basically. And like I say, protection. And it's strange how our faith is like coming back again. It's like the human psyche has this need to return home. It's like we're returning back to our old ways, because of the growth of witchcraft, or the growth of our religions, of our past religions. It's growing huge. It's because people have this need, this yearning to return to their origin.
Is the yearning to return to nature, because whether consciously or unconsciously or subconsciously, we feel the need to go back to the cycles of nature. Because look at what we're doing to the planet. And there is no, I will say this until I'm blue in the face, there is no other water. There is no replacement for our water. The water is the same water that the Aztecs drank, that the Nordics drank, that the Celts drank, bathe, wash, is the same water that just goes around and around and around within the planet. But it's the same water. So the qualities of water and the richness of water, specifically fresh water, and that connection with nature, right? That yearning, I think that for a lot of people is subconsciously to live more in tune with the cycles of nature so that we can actually preserve a planet. And for those who have reproduced and have offspring, to be the stewards of that space that they're going to leave for the offspring, for the babies, and to find healing on nature, to go back to crystals and to herbs and to traditions of ancient times, and to, okay, my ancestors did it this way, but why? And in the case of some ancient traditions, like in my case, the practice that I follow of the indigenous Mexica people is not to exist exactly like they did, but to understand why they did it that way and how can I do it now. You know, pulling threads. This is the slogan for my classes, pulling threads from the past to weave a tapestry into the future, right? How do we integrate this ancient wisdom into our day-to-day life? And like you were saying, these bottles where they have this water-infused crystals blending their energy is modern, is sophisticated. For some people might be ridiculous, but if it is ridiculous for you, you let it pass, you don't do it. But a lot of us are very interesting on, yeah, I would like to have some obsidian on my water, please, you know, to connect with that energy. Or I don't know, some other crystals that enhance the energy. And plus the bottles look so beautiful. I think they're
Yeah, they
cute.
do. Yeah, they do. A lot of these bottles do. Yeah, and they've got a lot of a friend that I used to work with. She was a teacher, and she used to have them as well. And it would be like she'd have aventurine in there, and amethyst in there, and some rose quartz. So she had greens and purples and pinks in there and things. So yeah, they do look very pretty, but I'll stick to my own.
Which one do you
crystals.
prefer? Which is your favorite crystal, if you
Oh
have
my
one?
goodness. If I had one, I'm just looking around at all the ones I've got. I do like, because they all are different things, but I think the one crystal that I would always go back to is an amethyst. I don't know why it's an amethyst. I mean, amethyst was very highly respected in ancient Egypt and in ancient Mesopotamia. It was amethysts and also lapis lazuli. I love that blue with the gold going through it. There's something there, and they're both really ancient Egyptian, and I don't have generally a connection to ancient Egypt, but for some reason I really like them crystals. I don't know why. They're like ones I would go to. I mean, lapis is really good for when you get like a headache and things like that, and a migraine. So I've been known to lay on the floor with my lapis on my with your third eye. So I was just like, yeah, that'll do. But yeah, they're the two that I would always go to, and I always say a really good quartz. You can't, quartz is just amazing. If you don't get any other crystal, just get yourself quartz, because it just does absolutely everything, and it can be used for anything at all, and it's non-toxic as well. So.
And if you're not very familiar with all the crystals, A, just have them around, but B, buy the book, right? So then you can learn all about this amazing correspondences. And if you are just catching on, the book is called The Head Witch's Little Book of Crystal Spells by the one and only Tudor Bath. Part of this collection of the Head Witch's little books, she has, for those who have been sleeping on, seasonal magic, lunar magic, flowers, spells, and charms and brews, if I'm not mistaken. And I just find everything that you share fascinating. I love the fact that you, and this is something that you and I talked about on the first time that you were on the show. Preserving the wisdom of grandmas, the grandmas, the land, the traditions, because when we are within the culture, it's an everyday thing, right? And it's like putting on your pants one leg at a time, and you don't realize the melting gold that you have in your hands until you start sharing with other people, and they're like, "Whoa, wait, you do what?" So as historian, right, as teacher, as educator, and in my case as an amateur historian and educator, yeah, I find it fascinating all the work that you have put together. I appreciate it a great deal. And I'm very thankful to be your friend, even though time doesn't help us sometimes to connect. But we follow each other on socials and we're always kind of like watching each other's work. So I appreciate that. What haven't I asked you about this book that is really important that people know?
Just to find your own, once again, I always say, okay, I'm laying it out, I'm showing you all these different crystals, I'm telling you how I do it, but once again, magic comes from within you individually. So you may resonate with a different crystal. You may have a specific crystal. Find it yourself. If you have the new agey crystal shops, I'm sure you do in the States or wherever you're listening this to, and you go in and they've usually got like rows and rows and rows of crystals in little boxes, I suggest you don't think about getting every single one of them. It may look a bit strange, but as you're walking and looking at them, just hover your hand over the boxes. And the crystal that you need, or the crystal that wants you, you'll feel it. And it's usually a little pressure in the center of your palm. It can be tingling in your fingers, or it can just be generally like an electric shock. You may feel just like, ooh, what's that? A weird feeling, and that's the stone or crystal for you. It may not be the one that you want. You may have this glorious idea in your head that, oh, I'm going to get a piece of gold. You may not, It may not be gold that calls to you. It may be a lovely little piece of citrine. It may, it may not be a piece of pyrite. It could be absolutely anything. It's quite surprising. It's a bit like working with crystals is a bit like working with deities. You might want to choose one yourself, but oh no, they choose you. And you might think, oh, I don't want to work with that one. But oh no, they choose you. And crystals do the same thing.
Yeah, you're gonna be you're the chosen one. I
Yeah.
have an experience. You're gonna love this anecdote. There is a beautiful place here in Michigan Avenue here in Chicago. It's kind of pricey. It's not on the most affordable side. But I love the store because they have all this wonderful. They have this like 2, 3 feet tall, like a meter tall amethyst.
Wow.
Veins and you can imagine, they go up on hundreds or upon thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
But then they have a wall, and on this wall there's a whole bunch of little trays with little tiny tumble pebbles of different
Yeah,
crystals.
tumblestones, yeah.
And they have your aventurine and your citrine and your amethyst and your and I of course immediately gravitated towards the obsidian. And so I stick my left hand because I'm very once I learned by someone who taught me left hand is receiving, right hand is projecting, I always try to receive and to read with my left hand. So I'm playing, but I'm looking away and I'm playing with all the obsidian, and I pick up one. And the one that I picked is chipped. So all of the other ones are beautifully shaped, polished, tumbled, and the one that I pick is chipped. And then of course I'm like, I don't want the chipped one. So I put it back, I buried it on the bottom of the little box, and I'm playing and playing and playing with them again and again and again. And I look away and I close my eyes and I pick another crystal. And it was the same damn obsidian. It was the same. It was the chipped one. And I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
Lesson learned. Lesson learned. That's when I learned my lesson. I'm like, you know what? It's going to be what the divine decides is going to be. It's like
Yeah.
we have no say so on these things.
No,
We really don't.
no, no, no. They choose you. They do choose you. Yeah.
It's amazing. So, what are you doing when this book is coming out next month? By May of 2024, it will be out. Again, it's part of the collection of the Hedwig's little book collection, not to be redundant. Are you presenting somewhere? Are you going somewhere? Is there going to be book signings? What are you doing?
Generally no, because it's coming out in England, I think, a month later. So yeah, so it's always a little bit different. Not that I know of. I have a couple of articles that will be being published by Llewellyn, coinciding with it, and that's on the Llewellyn web website, so you can always check it out there. And then I think I'm on maybe a couple more podcasts regarding it, but I don't necessarily do book signings. I still don't do book signings. Perhaps I should. I don't know. I'm not like that. I just like, ooh, yeah.
It's, you do what you do, and whatever you do, we love you. We love your work. We love to see you continue writing and, preserving this knowledge. Good luck with your master's and
Thank
good
you.
fortune, and I know you're going to do great. And for people that want to follow you and want to find more about your work, can you please share your website and your socials?
Yep, it's the my website is actually the House of Beth. So it's houseofbeth.com and it's BEITH. That's how I spell Beth, because it's actually a part of the Ogham tree. So it means birch. Which is part of my name. That's what Tudor Beth is. It's actually Tudor Beth. So it's like Tudor birch tree, really. So it's the House of Beth. And I'm on Insta at TudorBeth7 and also Threads. I do use Threads now. Once again, it's TudorBeth7.
Beautiful. So House of Beth, but it's House of BEITH.com. And she's got some beautiful photographs here on Instagram with these gorgeous animals and the greenlands of your homeland. And it's not
I'll be
always
put.
gray.
Yeah, no, not at all. I'll be putting up the blueberry one, bluebells one, the bluebell picture today. Yes.
Yes. And I wonder if UK and Chicago are on the same parallel. I wonder because you were talking about the weather changing dramatically from like morning to afternoon, and that happens in Chicago very often. And now I'm going to investigate that because, again, I like to get to the bottom of things. So thank you so much for being on the show. I don't even know how long we've been recording. This is going to be probably a 1.5 hour show. I don't care. I have had so much fun. The book is coming out in May here in the United States, probably a month later in the UK. And obviously it's a Llewellyn book. And people can find it on the Llewellyn website. I'm sure they can find it on local bookstores. And like always, I like to remind people, once you get the book, you can go and give a little review to the book. That helps the authors a great deal. So
Thank
if you
you.
get it from, even if you didn't get it from the devil Amazon, just go there and leave a review. Or you can go to Goodreads and also put a review there for the authors. It helps them a great deal. And we already said you can find her on TudorBeth7 on Instagram and on Threads. And House of Beth, BEITH. And for those who listen to me rambling and they like to support me, the work that we do in CSMP is volunteer. And of course, I need money so I can volunteer. And you can hire me for my many, many services at Linktree Magia Cerati. That's LINKTR.EE/MAGIA. CERATI, Magia Cerati, Linktree or on Instagram. I'm doing the Decolonizing the Goddess series this year. And if you missed any ones from January, February, March, you can still buy them on demand. And I have a whole bunch of on-demand classes, tarot classes, practical magic classes, the spell series that we did on 2023. And I've been doing workshops this year. We already did a workshop on Olympias, and we're going to do another workshop for Olympias of your home and workspace. That's going to be on May 19th here in Chicago. And stay tuned because I'll be doing my workshops now in Indiana, probably Elgin, pretty soon. So, fingers crossed. And you can always donate to my cause. I buy me a coffee or something. I gladly am open to receive. And you can find about me and all the things that I do on LinkedIn, Magia Cerati, or on Facebook, Tarot by Laura Gonzalez, or on Instagram, Magia Cerati. And you can also find all the podcasts for CSMP. We have over 1,000 hours of podcasts. Because it's not only Lunatic Mondays on CSMP, Circle Talk with Deborah Rose, Circle of Nature with Selena Fox, Blue Marble with Charlotte Bear, Songs of the Pagan Tribe with Karen Green, Paganos del Mundo with Pagans of the World who speak Spanish and Portuguese, Patricia Finclair, Christine Ortiz, Carolina Morjar with Tui Leva, Monica Govin, and yours truly, Laura Gonzalez. And then obviously, Lunatic Mondays. That happens the second or fourth Monday of the month. And in May, we're going to have Dave Gaddy talking about the simple magic of wild things. And we're going to have Billy Topetate talking about spirit guide invocations. So those shows in May are going to be great. Tudor Beth, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the show. I've
It's lovely to be here. I love coming on your show, Laura. It's so refreshing. It's great.
I feel that we're connected in some way. I don't know what. It must be the love of ancestral history. I think that's what it is. I think today I narrowed down. But who cares? We are spirit sisters,
Absolutely.
I think. And I leave you the microphones now to for so you can say goodnight to your audience. Thank you very much for being here, and the show is yours.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. And go with love and go with lots and lots of happiness in your heart and have a wonderful, wonderful year and enjoy whatever the weather throws at you. Find your magic in the raindrops. Lots of love. Blessed be.
Blessed be. Thank you all for listening. And my name is Laura Gonzalez. Never forget that you are loved. Bye bye. Lunatic Mondays is a production of Laura Gonzalez for CSN Podcasts, building bridges of community around the world.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow nature-centered paths. Join us throughout the week for various programming connecting with the community around the world. Please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSN Podcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. Until next time, many blessings.